because mental illness is tough and it's a struggle.
This is episode 4 of Double Depresso. Just a few notes before I play my chat with B. Thanks again for listening so far. Please keep sending me your feedback because it really helps me to keep improving with this. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you have time, please leave it a rating as well because that really helps with pushing it up the rankings so that more people can find it. All right, so here is my chat with B. So I'm chatting with B, and you're a writer from England, and you've been really kind to donate your time to have a chat. And so what are some of your thoughts about mental health?
Hello, thank you for having me on your podcast.
No worries.
I have a lot of thoughts on mental health issues and creativity. I guess one thing is like the fact that I feel quite uncomfortable with the title of writer, but I guess from the outside, for all intents and purposes, I am. I've written pretty much since I was small. I even earned my living writing. So, I mean, I guess the way we like to compartmentalize people on a very first interaction level, yes, I am a writer. But how, in relation to perhaps like struggles with mental health, I think that that also lends itself to this idea of the imposter syndrome that a lot of people have, which I have, and also is probably why I feel uncomfortable saying I'm a writer, because I also do other stuff. I also, that's another thing, like I want to say I'm a musician, but I don't feel like I'm a musician, even though I have a band, and I play an instrument in that band, and I write, and la la la. It's this feeling of there are other people out there who are professional, and I'm an autodidact, I guess. Like, a lot of the things that I do, I've taught myself, or it's just something that I've accumulated over time, like skills that I've accumulated over time, whereas other people have either like studied it or... Like, I'm sitting there maybe trying to write something or compose something, and I'm thinking, like, the person in front of me knows music theory or can tell me what the next progression is here, and I'm just like, this chord sounds cool.
Right.
Or people who have just had more experience performing and touring and things like that, and even though I've performed or even though I've even published, I still do not feel like a musician or a writer. I don't know even what that means. But over time, I've been feeling more comfortable just saying this is what I do, both for a living, and this is something that I... It's the way, at least through writing, whether it be fiction, my copywriting, or songwriting, it's my tool to understand the world around me and to make sense of a lot of my experiences. And if we're talking about mental health, come back to the point of productivity when you're in your low points or high points. But I've always found that my production or my creativity is something that I use to understand what has happened. And it's never something that I use in the moment when I'm in either moments of euphoria or despair. Because it's not physically or mentally possible for me. And I feel like it's not the case for many people. And it's that sort of myth of the kind of tortured genius artist, which for all intents and purposes is a pile of crap, in my opinion, because mental illness is tough and it's a struggle. And creators are just very lucky that they have the tools to be able to understand it. Or make sense of it.
And I think that's before we started recording, we already had talked about that it seems like it's easy to hear a lot about the glamorous sides of
the like, well, what it's like pursuing a creative career path. However, with this, there's this glamorization of of the mental illness with art, and
like your touch from the gods or something.
Yeah, and that you made a very important point that it's tough, and the realities of the pain are never really understood as a collective understanding. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's just I think it's just easier for people who maybe do not have to struggle with it to paint it in that picture. It's digestible to them.
Mm.
But it's just really frustrating, because I know, at least in my case, in moments of absolute euphoria, I've tried to be productive, but Christ, when I've like read back or some of the stuff or the recordings, and I'm like, what the crap was that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just nonsense.
Mm.
Or in the absolute sort of lowest points. And I think that's also a misconception, is that when we're in our lowest points, and I'm talking about my experience, so for whoever's out there who experiences depression or bipolar disorder differently completely, but this is my experience of it. It's not even, you have your moments of sadness, but it's just in a moment, for me, the despair is nothingness.
Yeah.
It's like, it's exhaustion. It's nothing means anything, so why would there be even a point to create anything?
Yeah.
So and it's even hard to go and have a shower or get out of the house or even talk to somebody. Like, a lot of friends would be like, they know when I'm not having a great period of time because I'm just not in contact. Mm. And it's not because I'm ignoring them. It's because I physically I don't have the energy to interact or explain it.
Mm.
I think we talked about this, is like, just also do not want to invite unsolicited advice or relatability.
Yeah.
Because you're not in the frame of mind to either take it on.
Mm.
And so in those two extremes, I've never been productive.
Mm.
But whenever I've come out of it, when I've been in a more stable place, then I use my writing to understand it. And I don't mean it in a voyeuristic way. I just use those feelings that I had as a vehicle to inform characters or moments I see it as like both a tool but also as material, but never in the moment, because the moment is just too exhausting to create.
And I think in terms of in that moment as well, it's all there's this sort of it convinces you that all is lost and everything this is going to be, we start to project like this is going to go on forever, and like it's always going to be like this, you know. And then
I think the more you go through it,
yeah,
I think in the beginning it's really tough. I know in my early 20s I just thought like the world is ending, but the more often you go through it, you do realize that you will get through it, and you have gotten through it. And in more sober moments, you can push through that. In other moments, you're just like, I'm just so fucking sick of going through this. And then, I don't know about other creatives, but I feel under pressure because of this myth of the artist being this, like, anointed Michelangelo figure, you know, working feverishly through the night to, like, make the magnum opus. And I'm just like, nobody's got energy for that, and I've got to earn a living.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on top of that, like, I'm not feeling productive, and does that mean I'm a failure?
There seems to be this idea that people, that you must be, like, recreating the Louvre, like, out of bread in your kitchen or something like that, in the background, is like, you know, or, like, doesn't work like that. No. Yeah, that there's this, the myths of these perceptions.
And I think also it's it's something I've just noticed a lot. I mean, even at art school, I went to art school originally, and the narrative is always about this, like, man. It's a male figure who is just, like, either, like, manic depressive, and in his euphoric moments, he's painting the Sistine Chapel. And then I'm like, where are the women in this narrative? And the women either film or or literature or whatever tend to be the Sylvia Platts who go and off themselves in like an oven, like. I mean, these are two very stark and extreme examples, yeah. But it's also something that as a woman, I'm like, where are my John Nashes? Where are my Michelangelos? I don't necessarily see it in our culture. I might be mistaken. Maybe I haven't yet come across them. But apparently, as a woman, I'm just mad.
Where do you think, like... where do you see this going into the future in terms of these perceptions? Do you think it will, like, things will improve in terms of a society of, like, or do you think it will get worse? Like, what are you, what
well,
are your
we're
honest...
in a post-Trump presidency now, so I don't know how positive. That's a hard one. I think my hope is that we don't work in those binary narratives anymore. My... maybe more pessimistic side doesn't see it changing much because there's a lot that it profited from creating those narratives. There's a lot profit to create make people feel that they're not good enough. You know, there's a whole self-help industry. There's I mean, I'm talking about this narrative of the woman being sort of like a bit mad. Do I see it getting better? That's a hard question. And I'm in a good mood, I'd say yes. But I'm not in a bad mood, but I don't think so.
Right, yeah. And you mentioned the self-help, movement, we call it, of all these different ways of doing things. You're like, you should do this, you should do this. And what do you think about all of these?
I think it's really dangerous. Yeah. I think it's really dangerous because I think there is absolute validity to feeling not great. And I think... perhaps it's a capitalism thing where we're always striving to be better, bigger versions of ourselves, success, more, not good enough, and we're always like self-improving that. I think perhaps in a pre-industrial time, like a lot of literature was created that was just accepting that this is part of our nature as a human being. We're not just like, I hate the word awesome, for example. Like, how are you doing? I'm awesome. Like, no, you're not. You're a human being, and you're multifaceted, and you're not awesome. But I think there was a period of time where just, like, it was okay to be unhappy. And I think we as a culture don't have a very, very little patience for people who are struggling. They need to get better, and they need to get better fast. And if they're not doing anything about it, then that's a problem. I think there's a lot to be said for just sitting in the moment and accepting that, at least that's something that I've now accepted, which has relieved a lot of pressure off me, is that there is no better. There is no cured. There is just, where are you at today and how are you managing it? And some days I'm more productive, some days I'm not. Sometimes I'm a nice person and sometimes I suck. And you just kind of hope for the best. But I really, like, I think I said to you, like, that nothing makes me more aggressive than this whole self-help, let's put, like, a shiny waterfall and some misappropriated quote about, like, the best version of you. You know? Like, the best version of you is wherever you are right now. And if that means, like, I'm sitting there and I want to watch reruns of Back to the Future, then that's where I'm at. And I want to be in my underpants, and I don't want to, like, brush my hair. That's, like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that there seems to be, it's like the modern media is that it's too easy to see all these sort of the idyllic caricature of somebody that you must be sort of pointing in their direction as well. If you're not doing that, then what the fuck are you doing? And it's like, really, why are we... why is it all like that? Or, you know,
we're all going to be heading to be these, like, Stepford wives.
I mean, the more as the years sort of tick by, like, is that going to be sort of pulled more to the extreme, or, like...
And a lot of the time, I find it really hard. Like, I'm also doing this podcast because I'm trying to be a little bit brave and more open about it. A lot of my friends... and family obviously know my struggles, and I'm open with them. But it's something... I sometimes feel like I'm in the closet with mental illness, because there is such a stigma attached. And if in my professional life I were to vocalize that all those sick days I took because I had migraines were actually because, like, I just felt an unending nothingness.
Yeah.
And I physically could not get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the migraines were also there, but, like, you know, and that you're always worried about being caught and inadvertently outing yourself. And I know that in the past, this is not without, this has actually happened to me where people have used my privately sort of confessed moments against me.
Right.
Like, I used to play roller derby for a very long period of time, and a person in my team used to always, who had their own agenda, would always cite any behavior that they did not feel like they wanted to have in that moment as being down to my mental history, even though in that moment I was absolutely okay. And that's a really painful thing to have used against you. Where you're compartmentalized into this very one-dimensional character. And so I know that I'm doing this podcast both because I don't want somebody else to feel like that, and to know it's okay, we're all fucked up.
And
I have a very good veneer. Like, I know from the outside I'm shiny and smiley, and I know a lot of people assume that I'm very happy because I'm a giggly person and I'm upbeat. But underneath it, I'm struggling, like, or I'm managing. Sometimes I struggle, sometimes I manage. I generally feel like humanity is garbage, but I'll never tell you that.
Well, it's all thanks for sharing, like, these. It's obviously, like, these types of conversations as well is exactly why I'm doing this as well, because it's just about hearing the realities of some of what people are managing or dealing with, like what we are really thinking about, what we're really thinking about,
Or and what then, we're afraid to admit.
Because
we, God forbid, we're not, like, on this road to being perfect.
And I think, and then I guess we'd already mentioned the imposter side of things as well, and then my hope, I guess, the more that we talk about these types of things as well, is that we become a little bit more, that we somehow feel like it's more okay to, that we can actually talk about these. We don't have to build up, you know.
I think we had this really interesting when we first met to talk about the podcast, how both of us were a bit worried that it would be like this voyeuristic, cringy Facebook overshare. I'm really trying not to fall, because I find that very awkward. And as somebody who's read many people's overshare, it makes me, like, marginally aggressive. Like, it's almost like sort of mental health pornography. I really hope that this is not how it is. I just want it to be something where people understand that, like, if you are, we as maybe creative people are very lucky in the sense that we have these tools to make sense of what we're going through, that maybe other people who are also struggling with the same issues don't, but it does not mean by any means that we're special.
You're not
special, Ben.
Who are you? But that's the thing as well, that, and you mentioned trying to make sense of and I think that's one of the, I guess, the underpinning thing behind just talking to somebody else about it, trying to make sense of it, like, just, you know, like...
Like, for very, very, like, some, it's very refreshing when you are open about it, and not in a kind of a, like I said, like, in a pornographic way, like, when you're just being authentic and saying, like, I struggle with this, and these are, this is, it's resulted in me doing X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
That, and then somebody's like, yeah, I've had that too, and then you're just like, oh, okay, I'm not failing at life, or I, like, very often I think, like, I should be somewhere else at this point in my life. I should be, you know, while everybody around me are having kids and getting married or professionally further, like, it doesn't really interest me, any of that right now. And there's also been times where I've thought to myself, with my history of mental struggles, is it even something that I can do?
Mm.
I know that it's compromised. I've made choices professionally based on knowing that too much stress can lead me down a certain path. And then I think also, is it also a decision to have a family when I know that this has affected a lot of people in my life, friends and family. And if I have my own children, like, that informs it too. So I think it's the responsibility to be able to express that through writing, through song, because there may be somebody else out there will be like, oh, me too. And then I've had those moments like, oh, me too. And I feel a little less alone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And just to talk a little bit about writing, so when did you, when was this something you feel like this is really close to me? Like as a...
That's interesting, because like, I think it's something, the reason I find it hard to say I'm a writer is because it's, I've done it, I don't know a life when I haven't. And I think it's very loaded because you think writers have to be good. But I might potentially be a writer who's just really bad. I don't know, but I still, that is what I do.
Right.
So I guess I write, therefore I am.
Well, that's a...
No, I'm just being like silly now. I've, from a very young age, it's something that I've always used to understand the world around me. And it's funny you should ask, because like a really early memory was... And I think it must have mean I must have depression from the time I was like a bit like a child, because I had this very distinct memory of like falling. I was driving home with my mom, and I had like a big like bunch of French fries.
Right.
And I was really excited to eat them.
Yeah.
And I remember stepping out of the car and tripping over the seatbelt, and like all these fries fell on the floor.
Right.
And I just remember feeling unbelievable sadness. Not because I couldn't eat the fries, because in that moment I looked at the fries and they looked like dead soldiers. Like it, the way they were scattered, they looked like defeated soldiers in a battlefield. And I went and I had the sadness, and I just like had to like, I wrote a little story like at the age of eight about French fry soldiers. You know? And so it's
That's like a salty devastation.
It was, and my mom was just like, I'll just get you new fries. I'm like, but you don't understand. It's so sad.
Look at
them. They're all like
little
soldiers.
Warm, greasy.
Soldiers.
So,
you said that, Ben.
I did. No, look, whoops.
And that's, and I just remember, and there was always these moments where it's just, I don't know, maybe I'm being over romantic here, but there's like a poetry to being sad. And I've always felt like wanted to find a way to capture that.
And I'm interested to know, we haven't really, I guess, talked too much about this outside of the time that we're having now. Like, so what was it like, the experience? I'm really interested because I guess there are a lot of people who, when they're pursuing a creative career, they have to move to a different country or move to different places around the world or around their country or wherever. They're, it doesn't have to be a big move or but what was it like? So what were some of the, I guess, did you have, what were some of the difficulties you had moving to a new country, I guess, to then follow what you're already doing? Like, did you have...
Well, that's interesting you should ask, because like, I think... I'm quite a, in my younger life was very, we moved around a lot.
Right.
So for me, actually the big challenge is staying still.
Okay.
But in respect to pursuing stuff outside of maybe my native land, which like, despite the accent betraying the fact that I am actually English and being in England, but for example, here in Germany, I don't know, like, I guess every time you move, you have to renegotiate who you are and the culture. And also there's always these scenes. And as somebody who is not really, like, I'm social, but I'm not a, a big scene kind of person. I don't really like to attach myself to any particular group. I get along with most people, but don't identify with any. And I think sometimes to get further, you have to be part of a quote-unquote scene. And I think maybe in that respect, I've sacrificed potential networking
mm.
that could bring my writing or career further, because I find it very uncomfortable to just talk to people because I am part of some scene. And also because my I might be socially capable, but I guess my mental struggles means that I'm very scared to get too close to people.
Sure, yeah.
And then you're also, on top of that, negotiating languages, cultural misunderstandings. There's like a host of things. But I've done it so often that it's not such a big deal for me these days, because, I mean, I've lived in the UK, in the States, in Denmark, in Austria, in Germany, in Holland. I mean, mainly in Europe.
Yeah.
And each time you... It's also a really cool opportunity to recreate yourself anew.
Yeah.
That's also been, in some respects, good.
Mm.
But, I personally struggle with scenes, local scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even when I was back home in the UK, I was also like, ugh.
Mm. Yeah, and that is something that is also, like, sometimes when we're moving somewhere, everybody's thinking, oh, that's just going to be, everything's going to be, like, I can't wait for you to do that. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait to see all the photos, whatever. And then, like, the struggles that not just come with the moving, but also if we already have, like, we're carrying some other baggage, how that relates to us after we've had another drastic change can be really intense.
Oh,
and then,
sure.
Yeah, and then how that relates to, like, it's even harder to talk to other people about it. Because you're
absolutely.
Thinking, really? But you moved somewhere so cool, you must be having such a great time.
But also, I guess, I don't know if you get this, but I always think to myself, like, I've been very lucky because I've been now in Berlin for the last 10 years. So I've set up a pretty stable, like, network of friends and, like, I understand how the system works.
Yeah.
I speak the language, but I'm always wondering how people, like, first of all, how did I do it in the past when I was like jumping around like a crazy person? Because you have to also, like, I always worry now if I were to move suddenly, like, shit, if I fall into one of my big depressions, where am I going to get the help? I have a very good network of friends here, so, like, but I don't have family here. So I very much rely on them. But if you're moving and you don't really have that established, like, either mental health professionals or friendships.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bit scary to me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, and then that these are all that just can start to snowball, you know, and where you're all a bit like, ooh, like, and then you'd really, it becomes a little bit like you don't know where to start, or like if it has been a bit of a, you know, you're just sort of focusing on one thing and all these other things sort of roll up until you're like, yeah, whatever, and then we'll sort it out later, you know, and then that's a...
And also, I mean, like, think about it, like, the stress of moving country, like, when you're negotiating languages and systems and bureaucracy, especially in Germany with the bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And it's very stressful, and if you're prone to feeling vulnerable and get triggered, or a condition gets triggered, like, that just compounds it. So I think you need some really good managing strategies in advance to be able to cope. And then you throw creativity on top and you're trying to negotiate that. And that's like, so respect to all of you people out there who are like doing this.
Yeah.
Because it's tough. And then if we all know Berlin winters are super depressing.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing as well. I mean, it can be, having only had one winter so far, but, like, you know, but there's so much, it can be such a, it's that same thing again as well, like, where it's very introspective because you just don't want to go outside because it's very cold, like, you're like, no, fuck that. But also, it just seems like, for me as well, because I'm a little bit sort of out of my element of my upbringing, but, like, it just was very, almost like an out-of-body experience just, like, what's happening now? It's too dark. It's too, you know, like, it can be hard to process, but not from just a physical perspective, but also just like what's going on. And then that can feed onto other, lead onto other stuff
as
well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's how I.
Although on the other side, I've always found that winter has been the place time that I've been more creative.
Right. Yeah.
Because, like, as soon as that sun comes up, I'm like, fuck it. I want to go out and dance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I want to be out there.
Yeah.
I'm so pale.
No, I know what you mean. And this is a question that I've asked a lot of, like I ask everybody, who are some of the, I guess, people who you, like some influences either to your writing or to your, like, so have you had any sort of specific writers or people who you really like? It doesn't have to be someone who is specific to writing or whatever, but any particular people?
Okay, so I have listened to this podcast and I knew this question was coming and I did not prepare myself for this.
No, that's fine,
don't worry. So, it's interesting because like the people who have the most influence on both my writing and my songwriting are songwriters. So even songwriters have a profound effect. And it's interesting because the one person that I love storytellers both in literature and in songwriting, and I love Nick Cave. Nick Cave and PJ Harvey, I would cite, are my two musical and the way they write is just it's just beautiful. Like it captures this kind of absurdity, it captures a rawness, but it's all packaged in just exceptionally good writing and observation of the human condition, to sound like a wanker right now. Or for example, more contemporary, I'm really, really into like new Americana, and there's this husband and wife duo called Shovels and Rope, and they just write such, like it's not cheesy country that we kind of, like the Garth Brooks country, but like quality sort of folk music with this kind of darker storytelling, like Deep South, kind of Flannery O'Connor short stories, but put to music, kind of, that's how I would describe them. And most of the people that influence me have this edge of being able to make something either very, that is intrinsically absurd or dark, exceptionally beautiful. And I feel that's always been something in my better frame of mind, when I've felt most accepting of myself, is when I've thought, yes, I have this joyful side of me, but it is also escorted by this sad side. And the moments that I've denied the sad side has been the times when I've been depressed. But when I've given that sad, bittersweet side space to just kind of accompany my joyful side, then it's just feels quite beautiful. I remember somebody trying to relate to me who happened to be also in, this is, I hate group therapy, I fucking hate it. So I was in one of those situations like many, many years ago, and there was this woman there, and she was just doing this thing where she was trying to relate to everybody. Like there was people there with a host of different conditions, and she was like, this is going to sound so mean, but I'm going to be mean, I don't care. She was like this very well-to-do, middle-aged housewife, very rich, and she meant well, but she was very frustrating. Like, I think, I don't remember what she was there for, anxiety or something, and then she wanted to relate to everybody, and she was trying to, it's okay, you can yawn.
No, I was not yawning.
Oh, I thought that was like a suppressed yawn.
No.
And she was trying to relate to everyone who, from the schizophrenic in the corner to the borderline girl to like me, who was apparently at the time diagnosed with bipolar, and the theme of like our pasts came up, and I mean, for me it was not an issue that my father was not present in my life, nor is. And then she wanted to make that as like a relatable thing, that was like to do how she understood why my depression was coming. And like, she kept on trying to approach me. It's like, I too grew up without a father, and I too know the pain. I'm like, there is no pain. Like, my condition has nothing to do with it. And like, can you please stop trying to talk to me about my dad? Like, what, this is so cliche psychology. And then I remember, like, he was following me around. I'm not going to paint myself in a good light here, but she's really frustrating me, and I was just like, kind of like, get away from me, woman. And we were in the kitchen making sandwiches, and then she was brought up the subject again, and I just had enough, and I threw a piece of cheese at her. And I got reprimanded, like a group therapy.
The dreaded cheese projectile.
Attacking somebody with a slice of cheese.
It starts with that. That's how wars begin, you know? That's like, first it's one bit of cheese, then, you know, it's all downhill from there. Then the floodgates open.
Needless to say, they said that I didn't work in group therapy.
Fuck. So. That's great, though. I love that it ended with, I wasn't expecting that at all. I thought you were just going to be like, and then I just ignored her. I didn't talk to her. No, but you threw a piece of cheese.
And it really went like flop.
Can you tell me, like, is that sort of sound, like, can you remember the like that sound very well?
I really
clear in your memory of just
flip.
Like a flop. Yeah, yeah.
Like hit her shoulder. Flip.
Yeah. I love that because that's kind of like the sound you get when of like the brand of like washing detergent, flump or zap or like zoop. Or,
no, it just felt like kind of like a really weak slap.
Ah.
But produced from dairy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, good old dairy slap.
It was like a cheese slice.
A cheese, I bet that just the wind resistance, I'm surprised it got sort of the lift that, you know.
Oh,
like
it was pretty close to her. Right. It was a frisbee.
Okay.
It was like you know, bit of a wrist thing.
Oh, I see.
I was making a sandwich and it went floop.
I just thought if you brought your own wind sock and it was like, ah, good. A north northeasterly. This is it. This is
and
the time.
Ironically, I'm not very good at throwing things, but that was really, really hit like the mark.
On that note, thanks so much for chatting.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you so much.
No worries.